Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening. Remember that you can find us on Facebook, or you can email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. This evening, our guest is Jenny Sita of InStyle Exchange. And in just a moment, Jenny will be back with us and tell us all about what she is up to. This is Heartstock, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. We'll be right back with Jenny Sita. Hello, this is Heartstock Radio. Thank you so much for listening. This evening, our guest is Jenny Sita. She's the co-founder of InStyle Exchange. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. Can you please give our listeners a little intro here of what InStyle Exchange is and what you do there?
Okay. So I co-founded InStyle Exchange in 2003. Originally, we were importing from India. We are a one-stop shop for apparel development. So when people have an idea, if they want to launch a clothing line or accessory line, they can actually come to us and we can help them from taking their vision into production. We actually made it in Dallas-Fort Worth area. We have our own factory.
And you had quite an extensive background before you decided to found InStyle Exchange. So I'm always fascinated. Your background is in tech, right? And how did you go from tech to fashion and accessories? Do you do accessories or just clothing?
Actually, we have done some leather bags, and I'm excited to hear about your, you know, post for the people. Oh, yeah, it is interesting that how I switched from software engineering into apparel development. Well, actually, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be in fashion, and that was my goal for a long time. But when I was applying to colleges, I decided that I wanted to do something that I wasn't good at. Actually, I wasn't good at mathematics at the time, and I chose computer science, and I got accepted to four different colleges in Boston. So I went into computer science out of not really because I always wanted to write code, but I was just wanting to challenge myself into doing something I never thought that I could do. So it turned out to be an amazing decision because I learned that no matter what we do, especially in product development, the process is the same. It doesn't matter I'm making clothes or I'm actually writing a piece of software.
And where did you grow up?
Actually, I was born in Hong Kong, and so I spent my early years in Hong Kong, and that's why I have an accent, and a lot of it has to do with the Hong Kong system, with the British educational system. And then we moved to the States because my great-grandfathers, they were already here. It just they went back to took wife in China, and so we were the last family leaving Hong Kong, and so we moved to Los Angeles, and then I lived in Spokane, and then we end up in Massachusetts. So I went to Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts.
Did your family have much of an influence in your career path? Did they help you decide what it was that you were going to do?
Actually, I know. I love my parents for not enforcing us to be one thing. At the beginning, I thought it was a little different than other Asian families because my friends, their families usually expected them to become like doctors, engineers. But my family, my parents just let us pursue the interests of our heart. And so I actually didn't have any influence into like, I have to become a certain way. And I love drawing. And so growing up, I just wanted to be a designer. And then when I got into computer science, I learned that I actually enjoy the creative process. So even now, I just love being a creator.
So this is sounds like the perfect marriage of technology and design.
Yes, very much. Because it's the same thing with like in both ways. If I'm writing software, I would do the same exact process. It's just now that when I design and produce apparel, I actually use the same methodology that I learned in engineering. So you need a blueprint, have a concept, you need a roadmap to execute your ideas. And I also learn a lot of other things, like in between you have to learn that things need to be flexible. You can't really always set up like tunnel vision. Like it's a creative process. So changes are unavoidable in between.
And help us understand the bridge between computer science and what you're doing right now. How did you make that transition?
So my co-founder at the time, she her family owned factories in India. So we actually had the, you know, already a back end. I just needed to apply the process. And actually, there's not a lot of a difference if you know how to design applications that users can use, user-friendly applications. You will do the same just designing a product that someone will wear. So the transition is almost like not really like a huge jump, except that the apparel business tend to be a little bit backward. So applying technology that was new, and that also distinguishes us from other traditional manufacturer because we actually have a process. We're actually very keen on making sure the quality is meeting a certain expectation. And that's always what makes our process so different than other people.
And your co-founder, was that someone that you met in school? How did that relationship evolve?
Actually, we were both in information technology. We were working for Milan Energy at the time in Atlanta, Georgia. And from Boston, I moved to Atlanta. So we worked together for a while. And then one day, my husband decided that we wanted to move to Texas, and Kieran, my co-founder, and she said, you want to just start a business together? And I, at first, I didn't really want to do it because I was so comfortable having a paycheck. I didn't want to go into being an entrepreneur. But no, I just took the leap of faith, and I decided to give apparel a try because that was my dream. That was what I wanted to do when I was 3 years old.
And who's your co-founder again? I'm sorry, what was her name?
Her name is Kiran Bindra, and actually she's no longer with us. She passed away 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. And it sounds like her family had experience and business already in the apparel industry, is that right?
They have connections to the suppliers and the factories in India. So we actually, I got the chance to be in working with the factory side by side. I spent some summers in New Delhi and Rajasthan. And the beautiful thing about India is they are great with hand embroidery. And so at the beginning, we were doing a lot of products for like Calypso in New York and some other companies in Los Angeles. They were selling them to Macy's and different companies, like their hand embroidered skirts and scarves. We did a lot of cashmere, and that was how we started at the beginning. But then later, I found out that in Dallas, we actually have local talents, and I decided that for better control of our quality, I decided I can set up my own factory in Dallas. And that's how we end up having our own factory and production in Arlington, Texas.
Yes, so this is fascinating because you're actually part of reshoring in the United States. What was that experience like? It's, you know, competing with global supply chains, that's got to be tough, right?
So we focus on having a streamlined process, shorter lead time, better quality. Yes, in terms of low cost, we cannot compete with overseas factories or third world countries. So we focus on high-end products. And we really believe that we can train people here. And I have had a lot of graduates from fashion schools locally come to learn. They work full-time for me. And so I am really proud of the fact that I can actually make the product in USA and provide jobs. And during the whole time, I also learn a lot about that management. It's about leadership. It's about training the next generation. So having the opportunity still like teaching them how to create apparel from the start to finish right here in Dallas area, I think that's amazing for us to be able to do that.
Yeah. So it sounds to me, I just want to make sure that we're all understanding kind of how your process evolved. It sounded like you were creating your own lines of different clothing items. And now what you do is you manufacture for other people, or do you still have your own clothing line?
We never really have our own clothing line. I wanted to launch our own clothing line at one point, but that is the same process as, you know, you have a concept, you have to test it out. If the market is not there, you just have to say, okay, there's no market for the merchandise. And that's why I never really was successfully entering the market as a designer. But what we usually do is we do create a merchandise, and in our industry, the apparel industry, we call it private label. So people can come to us and look at what we have created, and they can just use that, you know, use the same pattern and change the fabric. And that is sometimes how people enter the market with their own label. But in majority of our projects, like 90% of what we do is to work with the entrepreneur, the designer, to with their own unique concept. And then we just take them through the whole process. And we do our patterns on the computer, and we do the grading and everything in-house. We have our own cutting room and our own sewing room with 22 machines. So we have a variety of skills and background.
Mm-hmm. So we're right about at that halfway point. We're going to take a quick music break. Just a moment. We'll be right back, and we'll hear more from Jenny. This is really amazing. This is Heartstock, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. We'll be right back. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Today we have with us Jenny, and Jenny has founded a company called In Style Exchange. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Hi, Carol.
So I noticed when we spoke earlier that there's an awful lot of things that are coming into the fashion industry and creating apparel where technology is really revolutionizing things. How are you using technology at InStyle Exchange?
So the most recent big change within our own operation was the implementation of 3D. So when I talk about 3D, a lot of people automatically thinking about 3D printing, but actually we're talking about 3D draping. So in the old method, what's been like used for almost over 100 years was like we have to create a muslin, we create a paper pattern, and then we're going to try it out. And usually it takes a long time and many, many tryouts to find a good fit. But now with 3D technology, I can actually drape the garment on a avatar, a computerized fit model, so that I can actually check all the seams and I'll check the garments right on the computer and to make sure that everything is fitting really well before I cut my first sample. So that's already cutting down like 2 to 3 iterations of changes in the usual traditional way of making garments. Then even now I can actually swatch out the fabrics. And that's really amazing because, again, for the longest time, people have to create a line sheet in Adobe and they have to put in all the different swatches in Photoshop. But now we can actually doing it right in the software, and a few of the software in the market actually allowed this kind of operation.
And what other processes are we changing? It seems like there's some inherent process difficulties when it comes to apparel. Are there other things that are being changed at InStyle?
Well, actually, we have, in a good way, because we are a smaller company, we can adapt to changes quicker. So right now, the trend is we are looking at a lot of companies are hoping to offer more customized solutions, customized apparel designed to their customers. And because of direct-to-consumer, a lot of the customers are now directly connected to the seller, the designer. So what we can do quickly and has revolutionized the industry is actually on-demand creation of what people wanted to pick out from a collection. So we can even tailor it, what we call made-to-measure, using the software. We can change the dimensions, the measurements of a product and just adapt it to what the customer wants to order. But there's still some logistics that we need to work out, because no matter what, sourcing the trims and the hardware, the fabrics and the materials still will need some time to evolve to a point that we can actually get the materials in on time. So right now, there's still some planning that we need to go through the traditional way of stocking up on fabrics and trim. But in terms of the look and feel of a product, we can actually move over to just let the customer decide if they want it a certain way and to change it up the way that they want.
So who are your customers? And if they weren't coming to your company, would they be going overseas?
No, it depends on the project. So my customers are people who need our consultation and also us to help them develop the specification. And it's just easier if they work with us right here. We can check out everything, develop the tech pack right away correctly before we send it over to overseas if their volume requires that and their target market requires that. So I do have a designer in Arkansas that she wanted to make sure that this is at a certain price point that we could not do it in the USA. Yes, we have options overseas too. However, most of our project, 90% are done here in small quantities. So I always tell people that we are a sustainable hub because we are not doing mass production. So we're not wasting all those unsold merchandise that, you know, H&M is so famously, they didn't sell, and so they have to destroy them. We don't have that problem because we work with our designers to make sure that we are just making small batches.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of waste in apparel, and I think technology is helping us get a handle on that. You mentioned a tech pack. What is a tech pack? Maybe some of our listeners have never really heard that term before.
So a tech pack is like a blueprint, but it's a set of documents. So we'll have a technical drawing of the design, what it looks like, and then the industry, the apparel industry, use it to make sure that their factories will totally understand what kind of colors and what are the fabrication that have been decided upon so that the factory can use that to create the actual products from samples to production. So it's a very important set of documents that includes also measurements of all the sizing. So sometimes I tell people, don't worry about, you know how like when we go shopping as women, I have that tendency, like if I cannot fit into my size 12, and I just get really like nervous, oh my God, I need to lose some weight. But you know what? Every company has its own sizing, and sometimes they are like 1 to 2 inches different, even for the same number. And so women out there, you don't really have to worry because, you know, you look just fine, but the industry does have a set of standards, and that's how the factories go with. And we call them the tech bags.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, what's on the horizon for InStyle Exchange?
I'm so excited just to go back and finish my first prototype for a design that is in the wearable market. And that means not just sewing up the garment. This time I am helping and working with our client on the design of a technology sensor that we're going to be embedded into the product. So this is something new for us, not new in terms of our expertise in understanding like something wild, something have never done. We're not afraid to go out there and help our client to find a solution. I'm excited that this product is something, it's not just sewing. We are going beyond it. And actually sensor and wearables are actually the next thing that we'll probably be seeing even more. I know that recently I just learned that diapers, you can actually find out, you can get actually an alarm from the baby's diaper if you put a sensor there. So it's already in the market, but we're going to see a wider use of this technology, the combination of basically computer software, some computer hardware, and into the wearable, the garment.
So the idea is that the diaper itself will tell you when it needs to be changed?
Yes. And then I was like, why do we need that? Because it's already wet. Okay, I need to change it.
And the other product that you're working on, what type of, I don't know if you can share this or not, but what type of sensors are in the garment?
It's going to be something similar. Yeah, I can't really talk too much about it, but it will be similar in like a Fitbit, but in a different way. So it's monitoring the heartbeat, it's monitoring blood pressure. I see even a wider implementation in the healthcare side. And so this is really like exciting because it's like my mom just passed away 2 weeks ago, but if I could actually have a sensor monitoring my mom when she was around, that was my hope, that there would be products with sensors that were targeted for elderly that would help their caretakers and everyone else just knowing more about what's going on with our parents and, you know, people who we're taking care of. And I think that's really the path I wanted to see more and being involved more.
And how about materials? It seems like there's an awful lot of innovation happening in the materials sector as well.
Absolutely. And a couple of things that I'm really excited about. First, ham. Ham is actually less polluted in production than cotton. So this is going to be really exciting that we are going to concentrate more on growing ham and applying that into apparel. And we also have been working with another company. It's still on the early stage. And we can actually implement nanotechnology into our fabrics. And so that means some fabrics in the very near future can actually help improve our skin texture. I know some of them are already in the market. And so they can help us heal better or, you know, just provide even more a protective layer like antimicrobial. It's already around. But even then, we may be able to offer a better product than what we have already seen in the market.
That's amazing. We've got just about 2 minutes left. Not a whole lot of time, but maybe you can share also how you were able to fund your enterprise.
I always like, I'm a believer of being just honest with people. I think just like a lot of entrepreneurs at the beginning, I had a great job and then, you know, I quit. And then the first, you really just have to rely on all your credit cards. And so as you grow and you learn to manage, you know, your cash flow, and that's how a business can continue to grow and scale. It's a everyday challenge. Cash flow is always the biggest challenge for me, for a lot of business that owners I talk to. That's something that really, it's just out there. You just have to deal with it as a business owner.
And how might our listeners find you if they'd like to learn more about what you're doing?
The first thing is like go to our website. So www.instyleexchange.com is the address. And I am searchable on LinkedIn, and I'm looking forward to connect with some of the people out there who may have questions about what I do and what they can do if they want to design their own product. I can definitely give them help and give them directions and guidelines.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Really love what you're doing and appreciate you coming on Heartstock and sharing your story.
Thank you again, Carol, for having me.
Mm-hmm. And we shall see you next week. This is Heartstock, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via livestream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.